I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
We welcome you all to a Roll2Cast RPG podcast in the world of Dune, Adventures in the Imperium by Modiphius Entertainment. Starring Ellen Graham as Lady Deesha, Christopher Bond as Janice, and Sean Flerl as Saba. Story, GMing, and additional rules by Phil Harker-Smith. Artwork by Jack Sumner. Music by Paul Goodman. This is Shifting Sands.
Hello and welcome to Roll2Cast, the variety TTRPG podcast where we play a different game every season with a brand new story, a brand new soundtrack, and someone else sitting in the Game Master's chair. That today is me, Phil, and we are playing the game Dune.
Yay!
Sorry.
No, that
Adventures
was good.
Adventures in the Imperium.
There we go.
The two.
Thank you.
The two Dune 20 system.
I'm excited to get Dune to it.
Did you write that down in prep?
No.
Like, I got this note.
No, it just came to me in a vision from too much spice.
Well, Dune, Ellen.
We will get all of that out of our system in this episode, as we will be talking about the tone of Dune at some point in this episode. But as I said, yes, I am Phil, and my cast for this season are...
Hello, I am Ellen.
You are playing...
I am playing Lady Deesha, a Bene Gesserit consort.
And I am not Ellen, I am Sean, and I will be playing a warrior by the name of Saba.
Hey, I'm Chris. I'm playing Janice, who is a Mentat spy.
So Roll2Cast will be coming at you with weekly episodes for the whole of this season of about half an hour to 40 minutes in length. Very commuter-friendly.
Yeah. Unless I'm feeling a bit spicy and want to do a longer episode.
Or otherwise, two-parter.
Yeah.
Ooh, we love it.
And this season also sees the return of our longtime collaborator, the composer, Paul Goodman.
Hans Zimmer,
yes. So you would have heard
just a minute ago.
Yeah, you would have heard at the intro of this episode. He's had a ball making the soundtrack for this. I told him to do Hans Zimmer, but better. And I think he's knocked it out of the park.
Hell yeah.
In this episode, we will give you a bit of a rundown about what to expect coming up. We'll talk about Dune as a property, as a setting. We'll talk about the Modiphius game, Adventures in the Imperium. Mm. And we'll give you a little intro to these characters and their house, House Ikshana, as well.
Mm. Long may it prosper.
Yes. under the eye, or however we went with the...
I can't remember what we said.
Ours is the true sight, I believe, is the last thing that we landed on.
I like that.
The true sight.
Ours
the
is the true
sharps.
Sight. So, who wants to talk about their relationship with Dune as a series, as a...
Ellen does.
What? How dare you volunteer me?
That's not a man throw a woman in front of a bus just then.
I'm getting into the Dune universe.
So, that's good, Sean. Sure.
I use my voice to say... You want to talk about it? No, I'll talk about Dune.
Yeah, okay, go for it.
Yeah, I really like Dune, and I didn't actually have any knowledge of it until it was announced that the movie was coming out. Mm-hmm. I love Denis Villeneuve. I think he's just a fantastic fucking director and filmmaker, and really brings these big epic stories to life. So I was really fucking psyched. So I'm like, okay. I want to get ahead of this, so I read the book. Thankfully, Dune was delayed because it's a bit of a door stopper.
Yeah,
It's like what, like
it's right here in
900 pages
right
there, or something.
Got it here on the table. It is.
I could
chunky.
Flip through.
You can see my bookmark on page one, I think.
So we know where Sean's at.
Yeah, just under 600 pages, but yeah, it's definitely a big weighty boy.
And how did you find the book?
At a bookstore.
Yeah. Shit. Well, at the time, Book Depository was still a thing. And I also listened to the audiobook here and there. The book's very...
Who narrates that?
Some guy. Okay, but then occasionally some other people. But not consistently as well. Because sometimes they'll get someone in to voice Baron Harkonnen. But then occasionally it's just the original narrator. Oh, okay. Super confusing.
Yeah, that's...
Especially if it's your first time.
That's bad.
I guess I really like a bit of political intrigue. I'm really into... Shakespeare and that kind of idea of tragedy and houses falling and people's machinations kind of all turning to dust underneath them. So I really liked this kind of fantastical foray and blending the sci-fi with it as well for a big, big, big epic story. But then, of course, once the Villeneuve movie came out, I was sold because he's so good. And what's a very kind of dry political tome becomes peopled with tragic people and really flawed characters, but you see the humanity in them, and it's just stunning in terms of visuals and spectacle. And yeah, I'm pretty into it. So yeah, I also had the fortune of playing this game a bit before with like the idea was an all Bene Gesserit house. So I've had a little bit of experience, but not like a whole bunch. And that was more about, I mean, it's a role play heavy game, but we focus more on the role play than we did necessarily getting into the nitty gritty of the mechanics.
Well, I'll turn to you for insights when we get to the game system. You can tell us all about it.
No, I don't want to. That's me. That's my history.
I was going to say you.
He's lozenging.
Well.
He's Shay's lozenging as he reclines.
Well, so you have a kind of similar path.
I've got a completely different path in that I know very, very fucking little about
Dune. Sort of more recent coming to
it. It's an interesting thing where my first foray into Dune definitely was not the original lovely 80s classic.
You didn't jump in with the Lynch?
No, not on the Lynch train. But instead I came in watching and it's fascinating. This whole time I guess I've been saying his name wrong because I always said Denis Villeneuve, but that's completely wrong.
Villeneuve?
If only you, Villeneuve, how to pronounce his name.
But he's my favorite director.
I'm
an absolute massive fan of Blade Runner. Arrival is one of my favorite sci-fi films of all time. So anything that he creates, I'm going to go to the cinemas and I'm going to watch. And so I engaged with Dune. Didn't understand half of it, obviously. Like there's just bits that are going to fly over my head because I'm not acquainted with the world and with the lore especially. So,
well, that for me is a really interesting perspective. It's something I'd love to just quickly pick your brains on is that as someone who... already was very familiar with Dune, I was very curious to know, someone who was completely fresh, what the experience of the movie was like. And you say that you enjoyed it, but stuff did go over your head.
I mean, but not anything that was that broke the immersion, right, so to speak. Like, it's still such like a wildly populated and kind of lived in world, and like everything's baked in, and it does kind of reinforce this idea that I kind of love about sci-fi, is just dropping you into a world and not having to over explain everything. Even though in the second watch that I had last night, having a lot of kind of information and knowledge like with me at that point, I go, oh, okay, they do actually explain like quite a lot. Very like simply and very and much more visually than you would expect from reading the book. But no, the experience for me was incredible. I hadn't watched it a second time because it just, Denis Villeneuve films are ones that I kind of like to watch once and then just leave for about 10 years or then come back to it. But what I really adored about the Dune film, which is very much a hallmark of any of his films, is the time that it takes to allow moments and spaces and characters to just breathe. Mm. And everything, like, it's languid in the best possible way. Mm. In the similar way to, in like, Blade Runner and Arrival.
It sprawls. Exact ideas.
Yeah. And I think they're both kind of, I hesitate to use the word franchises, but yeah, they're both properties that benefit from that style.
Exactly.
Right?
And it's also a thing where, especially with Dune, like, it's one of those films where I go, no, absolutely this should be a two-parter.
Mm.
Like, it doesn't feel right for it to be anything other than that. So yeah, I adored it. I loved it. I became so engaged with the world, and especially in the last couple of weeks, even just reading into the lore of everything that happens before the year 10,191.
Oh, yeah.
And just going, Jesus Christ, there's so much here. Like, and just not realizing how much Dune kind of, no, more to the point, other way around, how much Matrix takes from Dune. And there's a lot of like parallels between the two. It's like, Uprising of Machines. Very cool in that respect. So yeah.
Chris?
Hey.
Hey! You were still gesturing at me, so I was like, is he ready? What's happening?
I gave you a thumbs up. Sorry. Right, yeah. I wasn't clear. Yes, Dune. I know Dune semi-well, largely because Phil gave me the book.
I did give you the book,
And you gave that to me for Christmas.
A couple of years
ago. 2021, yeah. I think. And so I read half of it.
Yeah.
And then put it down. Because I
think a lot of people do that.
You know what? This needs a part two.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, that happens to a lot of people. It's it's dry.
It's like the sands of Arrakis.
Yes.
I enjoyed it. It took me a while to understand what the tone was. And with all of the kind of spoiler things at the top of each paragraph. Anyway, what I loved about reading Dune and watching the film and the franchise as a whole is how seminal the work is and how many influences, like Sean was talking about, are like basically stripped straight through and how we can trace a lot of contemporary sci-fi to Dune, like Warhammer 40K, and as a result, StarCraft. You know, there are things where it's like literally, oh, this man was the first. This is it. Yeah. This is the beginning of this shit, which is delightful. And there are many, many other books, many of which I have read a fantastic YouTube a summary of. A son gets turned into a worm, which is very cute. We love twins when they get turned into worms.
Absolutely.
Hey, babe, would you love me if I turned into a worm? No. I tried to ruin the whole...
Yeah. Dune is the series that answers that question.
Your boyfriend wouldn't still love you if you turned into a worm and tried to... anyway,
walk the golden path. Anyway, that's outside of the scope of what we're talking about.
Kafka, eat your heart out. Thank you for laughing at that. I thought that was quite good.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. But other than like the role-playing game, I know the rules well enough, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
good. Yeah.
I hope so. Yeah.
One of us does.
And I think the tone of the game as a kind of like Grecian epic, similar to the books, which is what I alluded to earlier, these kind of like moments of prophecy, like, but you're spoiling it. Well, it's a Greek epic. Like, you are sort of supposed to know the ending before you start in that sort of like how the journey is the important thing. The game does a fantastic job at replicating that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So I'm probably the oldest hand at Dune. I read it a long time ago.
How long have you been doing this?
Been doing this a long time. So I read it a long time ago in my late teens or early 20s, and I've read it a couple times since
in the
then.
80s.
And,
we don't
how
need
old
to.
Do you think
hang
I
on.
Am?
Hang on. We don't need to be making.
We're not ageist on this podcast.
No PvP before we even start, guys.
And I've read a few books ahead. It gets pretty wild pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And his son and stuff have actually continued the series on as well. So it has this long legacy. But the thing that people know is Dune, the first novel, it, as you say, it's kind of iconic across sci-fi. And it's famous for being pretty dense, pretty political. Mm. The word I always come back to is austere. So it's very kind of dispassionate, grand, sweeping.
Sophisticated.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of kind of technical language early on, lots of terms that you kind of have to...
Just roll with.
Roll with until you kind of learn what they mean. But I think, as Sean says, it creates this universe that feels very rich and very lived in, that extends like far back into the past before the events begin. The Bene Gesserit, as you mentioned, their plans span centuries.
Yeah,
you know,
plans within plans within plans, right? Yeah. It's all about a legacy that's going to go on much longer than any one person will.
That's right.
It's all about big powers as opposed to, I guess, like it's individuals caught within big powers, which I always find really
it's
exciting.
It's not a space opera. It's not about the hero's journey through things. It's about the tides of destiny, usually seen through Paul, right? And I think the thing we haven't mentioned, I think, is there are a bunch of really iconic things that come from Dune.
Yeah.
The spice. Melange.
It must flow.
It must flow.
If you're at home and your spice is not flowing, you got to fix that.
You got to fix that up right now.
Get in the kitchen.
One of my earliest memories as a kid is going up to my grandparents who live up in the Adelaide Hills. And one of their friends, my grandparents are German. And they had this friend called Alex who had come from Germany, and he introduced me to Dune the game. Like, there was a computer game that was like a top-down strategy.
Shit.
Yeah, that's actually the second game. There's a point-and-click first.
And what I always remember is this one word where it'd be like, and there are sandworms.
That's the other iconic
sandworm.
The sandworm.
We have these cool things. They're like, makers and shakers.
Yeah.
Sandworms.
We called them Shai-Hulud.
Shai-Hulud. Oh, that sounds good in German.
Yeah, it does sound good. Yeah, so the other super iconic thing is the sandworm.
I knew about the sandworm so, like, well before I had any idea what the hell Dune was.
Same.
Because there was like a SFX, not museum, but place you could go to here in South Australia, and like they had all these green screens, so like you would walk through all these different sets. And then at the end, you'd get the VHS of you in all these different kind of like green screen places. And one of them was that you get swallowed up by a fucking giant sandworm.
Of course.
So there's a VHS somewhere in my mum's house of like a 5-year-old Ellen being eaten by a sandworm.
And so we'll find it for
we'll
Patreon.
Find it, yeah,
I would
yeah.
love to, honestly. I'd love to go back on memory lane.
I learned about the sandworms, and this is the kind of influence of this series. Because of Guild Wars, the fucking MMO RPG, in the second expansion, you ride sandworms. And I was like,
holy shit,
that's weird.
No, it's not cool. It's just stolen.
It's just a fucking homage to a very impressive, important piece of science fiction history. I mean, what is it? The Emperor's fucking soldiers, the
Sardaukar,
are space marines. In the movie.
Genetic, impossibly fierce, single-minded.
The way they like honor themselves and like decorate themselves is very space marine.
Yeah.
It's so fucking cool. I mean,
that's more of a Villeneuve touch, but
that threw me off hard.
So weird,
isn't
it? I loved it. I fucking loved it.
Well, in this universe, Old Terra exists.
Yeah.
Tens of thousands of years in the past. So, maybe bagpipes survived that time.
Bagpipes can survive. As a Scot, bagpipes can survive
anything.
They're
survive
a
anything.
Pretty good instrument.
So one day they took Old Terra.
You know, for that kind of
well done them.
Religious drone.
Well, I think Villeneuve was touching on some crusades and Catholic and... You know, some of those kind of things, and definitely like Scottish orders. And bagpipes are just a kind of commanding sound. Like,
absolutely. And then, of course, there's Dune, there's Arrakis itself.
Yes.
The desert planet is also pretty iconic, kind of sci-fi setting.
Hell yeah.
This kind of harsh place that is, but also essential to the functioning of the universe.
So, and that's where we're setting our game.
It is. So we're going to try and bring you some of these iconic things. So even if you're only passingly familiar with Dune, that you'll get the kind of the big things. We'll be on Arrakis, we'll be dealing with the spice melange, which is very important substance that makes the universe tick, essentially, and the worms as well. Mm. I'm sure they'll make an appearance at some point. And
when you least suspect it.
check under your bed for worm signs.
And Sean will be doing the SFX for the worms.
Yep, so, Ellen will be, actually.
I hope it sounds a lot like all of my other sound effects, which is usually just cooing. No, that's terrible for a sand worm.
That's the sand trout.
It's a tiny worm.
Oh, that's the baby
ones. Baby ones,
Oh, how cute.
So I'm going to explain at length the life cycle. No, let's talk about the game of Dune.
Oh.
Let's talk about the game of Dune. So it is a Modiphius game. It is a 2D20 game.
First time for Roll to Cast doing the 2D20 system.
Yes.
And Phil not doing a interlock game from
Altalsorian. You've been freed.
For our 10th anniversary, we thought we'd give you a non-Altalsorian.
Altalsorian are going to send us a letter that says fucking cease and desist.
Yeah. Just you get sent a D10 in the post as like a weird mafia
wrapped in a newspaper. Yeah.
So it's a 2D20 game. So as that states, the standard thing is that most rolls you begin with a pool of 2D20s rolling under a combination of your skill and drive. So your reason for doing something is as important as how good you technically are at it. And then as many dice pool games operate, the push and pull comes from how many successes you need from that dice pool and how many dice you can marshal into it.
Yeah.
For people unfamiliar with role-playing games, we want to roll low on our
d20s. Yeah. So we do not tie.
If I have like a faith of 8, which is one of my drives, and a battle of 8, which is one of my skills, that's a number of 16. I roll at least 2 d20s, and I want to get as many of those d20s to be under 16 to be a success.
That's right, yeah.
And there's not failing forwards, but there is
an
element of creating complications.
Absolutely, yeah.
When you fuck shit up.
Any 20s are bad, not goods. So a nat 20 will introduce complications. So those are things that stay with you and make things tougher. And ones are crits and give you bonus successes. There are other ways of getting bonus successes as well, but that's the kind of basic form of the game.
Yeah.
How did you kind of find that system in play when you used
as the veteran,
as the experienced role player in the room, Ellen?
I think as well. Keep in mind this was for a stream, so we were kind of more focusing on the role play elements. I guess what it does is it just makes the mechanics really simple. Okay, I want to do a check. I roll 2 d20s. If I want, I can spend something to get extra d20s. Boom! Do I do it? Yes, or do I get any complications? Okay, we assess that and we move forward. That's kind of the joy of it is that a lot of these things like that you have as a character can be created on the fly, or they're very, very easy for kind of adept role players to just take and roll with the punches. So you can have assets, but as we were talking before at the table, there are some things that you just might inherently have, you know, like if it makes sense for you to have it, you got it. And you can use it in a way that services the story. It's really all about kind of all furthering the story, which all good role-playing games do. But it's just got that element of fluidity, which I really appreciate.
Yeah.
That's my thing. Anyway, that's Ellen Reviews
and
role-playing games corner done.
And as Ellen was hinting, there are a couple of pools of resources that will help you kind of keep track of as we play. And they're part of the kind of push and pull of the game and how you direct the narrative.
Think of it like betting as well. It's like you're betting against a house sometimes. Be like, oh, okay, I'll give you this and then I'll see how it goes and then I can fuck you up later.
Mm. That's right.
And having a shared pool as well, keeps everyone working together as storytellers, as opposed to my character does that. It's you know, what story are we telling?
Do you think you could explain momentum and threat in a concise way? I'm gonna go no. Sean.
I reckon I can do it. So you've got two main pools that are capable of kind of swaying of a D20 dice pool. So generally speaking, players use momentum and the GM or the, what's the word that they use?
It's the GM, yeah.
The GM uses threat. So momentum we can use to do certain things like buy extra D20s or to like add little instances, like maybe create assets, which are being able to introduce things into the game that can help us in a given scene. So for example, I start with two D20s. Phil says to me, this is a difficulty of 3. So what that means is I need to get 3 successes, but I've only got 2 D20s. I'll go, I'm going to use from the group pool, I'm going to take 1 momentum, which gives me an extra D20. Now I've got my 3 D20s. Or if we don't have any momentum, I have a second option, which is, all right, I'm going to give you threat, which is a resource that Phil can use to add complications to make things harder for us. So they're both resources, one for the player, one for the GM, to influence a scene to either make things better for us or harder for us.
Yeah, so it's all about marshalling your... That's a really good explanation. Momentum is generally generated with bonus success. So if you succeed beyond the requirements of the role, that turns into momentum, which you can use in the moment.
Yeah, if you give a difficulty of 2, but with that pool, I get 3 successes, I get 1 momentum for the group.
Yeah. Well, you can either spend it straight away to improve the outcome, or if you don't have a use for it, pop it in that pool.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time you will be just spending it in the moment to kind of get that benefit. But yeah, there's that pool that goes up to 6 as well. And threat doesn't have a limit. You can just keep piling on threat for
Gulp.
Me. yeah,
I'll use 16 threat, please.
That's right. As you say,
thanks, Ellen.
Will you get experience if I ever generate 4 threat at once? Everyone gets experience in that scene. So there's benefits.
Heaven help us.
there's benefits for adversity as well. So anytime you fail or get hurt or are threatened, you gain experience points.
Yeah.
So it's all to do with fighting through adversity, the push and pull of fate. As you say, spending now for the consequences to catch up to you later. There's other interesting systems like the asset system you were talking about. An asset is almost anything that allows that allows the kind of scene to take place or can be marshaled to make things easier for you. As you say, a knife is an asset, but also leverage or blackmail is an asset that you can have. So if you know someone is an addict, a Samuta addict, that is an asset that may allow you to begin a scene at all. Or let you tilt a scene in your favor.
It literally could be an instance where, like, if you're having a conversation with someone, they're not giving you the information you have. You could then, if it's not swaying your way, you could create an asset that is, well, I have some information on this person that actually I could sway towards my side.
Yeah, and then
spend the requisite. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd spend the requisite. And then what we would do is we would go, okay, let's go back and see how you found that. And we would narrate where that originally came from. So it lets you be flexible, which is really cool.
You likened it to a Blades in the Dark kind of like mechanic.
Pretty
almost.
Apt,
Yeah, retroactively changing the scene.
Assets are guns or friends. And sometimes you need one and sometimes you need the other.
Or both.
Or paper.
I wouldn't know that I would say blackmail's a friend. Friend to the blackmailer, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got it, that's a friend. Friend or paper or gun.
That's how I've got all my friends.
They're quite dynamic as well.
They
so
are.
You can, in conflicts, you can target opponents' assets so you can remove them from play in a more individual duel that might be knocking a sword aside.
Mm.
But in a more intrigue-style conflict that might be discrediting evidence or removing a friend, that
spreading
ally.
A rumor and there's someone, a friendship falls away.
Exactly, right? And then that person no longer trusts you, they can't be used. So you have these flexible systems where you can kind of, whatever the moment requires, you can bring into play, and it really rewards inventiveness. So I think that's really cool, and hopefully we'll be seeing a lot of that as we...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Go. The other main system I think is worth talking about is traits. Assets are actually a specific kind of trait. So every scene has its traits. This scene might be formal. This one might be loud. This one might be smoke obscured. There are all sorts of different traits. And another way of spending momentum is to influence the traits. So if you want to get everyone drunk at a party, you might introduce a debauched trait by spending some momentum, making a roll to go around that party, getting everyone a bit more
sloshed.
Yes.
Right? And that would introduce debauched. And that trait then comes to bear in any future roles. So there are ways of influencing the circumstances to your favor in the macro sense and in the moment, whether you're spending momentum to buy those dice or you're spending it to change the landscape that you're fighting on,
yes.
Whether that be a literal landscape or
a political landscape. Yeah,
or an emotional landscape.
Exactly.
You can, yeah, your traits can affect yourself but also others, and you can put your little dirty little fingers all over the scene.
Yes.
You muddy someone up.
It means everyone has their different ways of fighting, their different methods of tilting things to their favor. And a lot of the thinking is done before the dice are even rolled, which I really like. Is there any other kind of notable parts of the system you guys want to talk about?
What we're going to get into next, which is a big part of the system, is creating your own house as opposed to taking an established house.
Yes.
They really encourage, like, make your own house and let's see where that fits into the universe, which is what we're going to go into as well.
Yeah.
Again, which I think is, as we touched on earlier, it's the thing of playing this grand story as opposed to playing something like Cyberpunk, where you're like, I'm on my own, I'm striking out against the man, I might get a ragtag group, but who knows where our alliances lie. But together we have all created one house. If anything, this is the story of House Ikshana, not the individual stories of our characters, which I think kind of changes the perspective of the player as well to what kind of story you should be telling.
Absolutely. And there's just to double back slightly from that is that there is another mechanic with supporting characters where you can freely bring in minor characters from your house and even create supporting characters to play in scenes where you're not present. And those supporting characters, those notable ones, then become a pool of supporting characters who can be played
float
by anyone,
in and out. Yeah.
Float in and out. I can bring them in and use them. Your house as itself becomes a character, which you guys all have access to, which is really cool.
Feels like the Player 2 controller that's just waiting to press start and you can jump in. Anyone can jump in and grab it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. So we began by creating a house. So this is a political game where there is the Imperial House, House Carino, and then there are major houses underneath that, like the famous House Atreides or House Harkonnen. So we created a minor house. What's the name of that house?
Ikshana.
House Ikshana,
yes.
Which is Sanskrit for sight,
and
your overseeing.
Your emblem is an eye shining rays down below it, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Seeing everything.
And your house, it's based on Arrakis. So the house governing Arrakis in this time period is House Harkonnen.
Yes, this is set just before the events of the film, if you are familiar with
you're
that.
You're not going to see any Timothy Chalamets in these parts.
No. We try not to interfere too much with that timeline.
Yeah.
While they are governors of the planet and responsible for the spice trade, they license smaller houses to maybe do some of the harvesting or operate refineries or scouting. They don't handle everything themselves. There's lots of room underneath them for house miners to get things done.
Yeah.
And what is it that your house specializes in?
So we kind of have two domains.
Yes.
Which is, you know, there's rules about what your house is kind of.
What do they
domain
call it?
Is.
A major and a minor, or a primary and a secondary?
Yeah. Your primary domain, you have a near monopoly on.
Yeah, which falls under the banner of industrial expertise. So we are all about spotting where the spice is going to be, or spice prospecting. Is that right?
No, sorry, sandwich.
We flipped
espionage.
Them.
Oh, we flipped it.
Yeah.
We flipped the bitch.
We did, yes.
To quote.
Clone High.
So our primary is espionage, and we deal in Fremen wisdom. Ooh. We're not Fremen,
but we know about this stuff.
We're using the natives of the land.
Yes.
Yeah. It's sort of like a Fremen intelligence.
We spy on them. Yeah, people might get information from other means. We have taken it upon ourselves to go, well, they're on Arrakis. Why not use their knowledge? That's how we'll get a leg up on everyone else. And that's how we've created a monopoly, by using the people that know the world the best.
Yeah. It's a bit more devious than the Harkonnens have like might is right, and they see the Fremens as lesser than because they're horrible colonizers. Yeah. We're also horrible colonizers, yes, but we're sneaky about it. So we're like, well, they've already got the information about how to live here. So let's...
And pass it off as our own.
Maybe at this point we should say that we're playing an evil campaign.
Yeah, for the first... as a role to cast
Evil's
first...
Evil's relative, right?
As a role to cast first, we're not playing nice characters. We thought, what if role to cast bad?
Yeah, for our 10th season, if you want to listen to lovely people doing lovely things, there's like... 8 seasons? Starfinder, season 8, maybe not. Season 9, maybe not.
Witcher, not.
Season 7.
The Witcher's definitely not.
No.
Season 7's good.
Go to season 7.
If you want to listen to fun stuff, listen to season 7, kind stuff, not fun. This will be fun.
Idealistic people idealistic. Going against and making their own way in the world, then yeah, go to season 7. But this is fully steeped in aristocracy, in hierarchy, in fiefdom, in colonial kind of ideologies. It's
power politics.
Yes. Bastards.
So the way...
Oops, all bastard season.
So as you hinted, the Harkonnens, and especially the governor of the planet at this time, Raban, is known for his brutalization of the Fremen people, who are the quote-unquote natives of Arrakis.
Played by Dave Bautista.
You looked at me. Well, you
sorry,
no,
I was just paying attention to you.
So because they're being brutalized, they respond and they attack the harvesters. So harvesters have to go to their home turf, the deep desert, to mine the spice.
Yes.
So they constantly attack. Your house, knowing how they attack, where they attack, how they move, how they conceal their movements, is incredibly valuable, because knowing where the Fremen might attack helps mitigate the losses that they constantly cause.
Yes.
So that is your primary domain, this Fremen intelligence, this Fremen wisdom, both in how they attack, how they move, how they conceal themselves, but also maybe hidden spice caches and things like that. There are lots of...
Their culture.
What they
think power is, what they think good is, where they come from. Are there some that we can turn to our side?
Yes.
All that good stuff.
Yeah.
And you've also said we are just an espionage house, so people might just come to us for information regardless, because we may know other things. Who knows?
Yeah. You're known for seeing what others don't. And then you have a secondary domain as a house miner as well. This is not what you're good at, but you are in competition for.
Which is industrial expertise, and is, am I correct in thinking that's...
Spotters.
Spotters.
Yes. Mm. So worm signs are where the worm is going to come up, and that's a bad thing, because the worms are bad.
So they're drawn to vibration. They are these giant sandworms that roam the desert. So if you have a harvester...
Yeah.
It's going to make a lot of vibration.
Harvesting that spice, that precious resource on this planet... it's going to attract the worm.
And what happens when a worm comes along?
It eats the
whatever
machines.
The fuck it wants.
And so you have worm. We have spotters.
Before it arrives, we get
worm signs. Yeah. And we are keeping an eye out for those worms so that we can evac. If you've seen the movie, it's like that part in the movie where... You know, the handsomest man in the world does the most brave thing and nearly sacrifices himself for the workers.
Yeah.
You know, that scene.
You guys are doing
we all agree Oscar Isaac is the most handsome man in the world.
Agreed.
Which is quite nice.
Yes. It's good to have universal truths.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's the one.
In a world of grey morality like Dune, it's nice to have these universal truths to clutch to. So we're experts in spotting. We're experts in spotting worm sign. We're experts in... Oh, sorry. We're in competition spotting worm sign.
Yes.
But we use Fremen knowledge to do that.
Yes. Yes. And to do the
other aspect of spotting,
which is
to
even find the spice in the first place.
Yes. So spice comes from beneath the sands in these events called a blow, where there's a build-up of gas beneath the sand, and then
Spice.
The pre-spice mass explodes and becomes the spice melange on the surface, and you have to get there before other people do, before a storm blows it away.
Or more worms.
More worms come along. Yeah. So there's a sort of being the first to see it is also extremely valuable. But you're not the only ones out there with spotted ornithopters prospecting the spice.
There's a rival house as well that we have.
Yes, you have a rival house.
Animal house.
House. Not quite.
House Kaddish.
House Kaddish. Some religious nut jobs who we don't like. And they hate us.
They loathe
they
us.
They loathe us.
When we were looking for... because you can have scales to how the houses dislike you. It can be like a, you know, whatever.
Yeah, a rivalry.
Rivalry, but maybe we will connect
on some
things.
We can still work together
on
things.
No, they loathe us. They hate our fucking guts.
for a difference in morals.
Yes.
So they're a very religious house.
And we are not.
You're not. You treat, you're seen with or associate with the Fremen natives who have their own religion, their own mysticism, which makes you terrible.
Bad.
There's also maybe they have interesting thoughts about a Bene Gesserit, a lady,
yes,
as well.
Possibly. Yeah,
having, you know, being perceived as witches and having their own kind of aim in terms of faith. So, we're just not. No, we're liked by House Kaddish.
Well, on that, we will move from what your house does to who you are in that house. You play agents of the house and you play a Bene Gesserit.
Yes.
What's a Bene Gesserit?
What's a Bene Gesserit with you?
Austere, dry, grand, sweeping.
Yeah, you steer us left, we'll steer you right.
Stop it!
Sorry.
That was good, though.
Thank you. Bene Gesserits are this holy female order. When I say holy, I mean in terms of they're all female, but also there is an association there with faith. Their whole ethos or how they appear to others is we're here to serve. We're here to serve. We have this long plan about kind of bringing order back to
humanity.
Humanity, yeah. Essentially. And given that we have no more thinking machines, all of our higher thinking is done either by Mentats or Bene Gesserits, and essentially are a whole order. They are taught total discipline over their bodies and minds. Some of them have the ability to know if people are lying, to extract the truth from people. They have a kind of shared wisdom, but that's you know, for higher up in the orders. Mainly, they are women who are sent to the order, usually from a very young age, trained in the way of the Bene Gesserit, this discipline, this kind of weirding way, this slight witchcraft. And then often they are sent out to other houses for the Bene Gesserit's purpose, usually as concubines or consorts. They're just very powerful things to have in a house because they have their own sense of, their own kind of wisdom.
Yeah,
and
they're often very wise, very, they can fight usually.
Yes.
They have
control. They're usually trained themselves in politics and communication. The Bene Gesserits do this because they're playing their own game and there's this kind of breeding program, but a lot of the houses aren't really privy to that knowledge.
And you've taken as well one of the most iconic powers of the Bene Gesserits as well, the voice.
The voice, yes. So
this is a way of commanding the will of others, right?
Yeah, essentially control others by pitching their voice through this total discipline of you know, the mind and body. They can somehow tap into a frequency where they can bend others to their will. So yeah, pretty spooky, witchy stuff, which I like. As people might know, I like the spooky shit.
So, and apart from that, your character, Disha.
Yes, Lady Disha.
She's the consort to the Viscount of the house, the ruler of the house, Vadim Ikshana. Can you tell us a little bit about her as a person, what she values?
Yeah, so like her, what she values most is power. It's a very important thing. It's why Arrakis is here, right? It's because it is the seat of power for the universe. The spice runs everything. And so, especially for Disha, you are a person with a lot of power as a Bene Gesserit, but not really, because you have to play a role in this long spanning story that is not your own. And more importantly, like, again, we're talking fiefdoms, we're talking hierarchy, we're talking aristocracy. There is something that is very ancient to the world of Dune, even though it's however many thousands of years in the future. The gender politics are still very, 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 very much in play. So it's, I'm playing a kind of thing with Lady Disha where it's, she wants her own power. She's kind of a bit sick of being a pawn and having this own power. It is so frustrating to then not be able to get what she sees as hers.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah.
Cool. She's a bit of a mover and shaker. I was saying to you guys, my inspiration is maybe like the Tyrells from Game of Thrones. Yeah. You know, they've got that savvy, and they might not be as seemingly duplicitous as some of the other houses.
They're very charming. Absolutely.
It's playing the game wisely.
Yeah.
Whatever opportunities arise, that's where she'll go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. Chris.
Oh, hi.
Who are you playing?
Okay, I'm playing Janice, who is a Mentat spy.
Tell us about Mentats. What are Mentats?
So Mentats, as was alluded to earlier, computers have been, AI has been completely removed. There was a robot uprising, and that went badly.
Oops.
No good.
It's not good. And so we've created kind of people computers called Mentats. These are people who are able to do massive amounts of calculation. Data storage. They're not kind of superhuman in every regard. They're very people, but they do have the capacity to do computer-like calculations or hold computer-like information. They often use a drug called Sappho, which stains the lips red to help boost them if they need it. I'm playing a spy type of those as part of the house. I'm here to make sure the house grows. Keep the information on the Fremen informationable. They're fallible is what I'm saying, right?
You're real good at numbers.
Yeah.
There's a few things you can kind of choose as a Mentat. What kind of Mentat talent did you go with?
So I went with calculated prediction because my character is big brained. He can kind of deduce what's going to happen sort of in the future. There are only so many odds and angles that something can do, and finding kind of what the next thing will be is something he does. So he anticipates things. He's a spy in that regard. Where are these people likely to meet next? What is their angle of approach likely going to be? Where is this information likely to have come from? That sort of thing.
He collates information and then makes a probable prediction out of it.
You've seen what's his name? The lad, the English show?
Sherlock.
Sherlock, thank you.
Oh, Spylock.
Spylock. Spylock. He's a bit Sherlocky, but less pretentious and more spy.
Yes.
Thank God for that.
I do like that idea of like, wow, is he using magic? No, he's just very good at predicting. Numbers and odds, and like he's just using knowledge.
And it's nice because he still might be wrong, but you can see how the lines of data lead you to kind of like hop, skip and a jump.
It's a scientifically improved and boosted with drugs and training mentalism.
It's a cold reading.
It's a warmer reading.
Yeah. And as a person, what's kind of notable about your demeanor or your reputation? What kind of person is
he? Is loyal to the house.
Janus.
He loves his duty. He loves power. He believes that what must be done must be done. The house must grow, and that power is wielded by those who deserve to have it. So if you can take it from them, then you deserve to have it.
If we've got a sort of Lady Marjorie over here, so sort of outwardly charming.
Hello.
inwardly conniving.
Yes.
Kind of power grabbing. What's your outward kind of presentation?
A quiet, unassuming soldier of the house. But instead of martial arms, it's secrets.
So sort of a stillness, a focus to you.
Let's use Game of Thrones and let's use
Littlefinger.
But, excellent.
But less self-interested, more self-sacrificing.
That kind of demeanor.
A quiet
confidence.
Yes, quiet confidence.
Excellent.
It's not Littlefinger that I'm thinking of. It's the
Varys?
Varys.
Varys. Yes.
Varys is a far better
He's
visual.
A much better player, certainly, in terms of...
Visually, think Varys.
Cool. Excellent.
Yeah.
Sean.
Yeah, well, I'm playing Saba, and Saba is the warrior of a house. He's not the sword master. He's not like anyone in any sort of particular power. Physically, Saba, and this goes into one of his traits, he's incredibly imposing. Like, if you start with Kratos, take away the makeup.
That's where you start?
Yeah. Start with Kratos, take away the makeup, like make him much more tanned and beaten down by the sun and years of being on Arrakis. And he is like, he's a bald headed. He's got a scar across one eye. Like, he's an incredibly imposing, like foreboding, terrifying figure of a man who can move quick and fights quicker. He is like a blunt instrument. And more importantly, he knows that.
What's interesting to me about the way you've built your character is that the impression he gives is a blunt instrument, but some of the talents and things you've taken actually belie that a little bit. So what are your talents?
Well, so basically the two things that he is very good at is battle and moving. So, I mean, for me, that's, you know, his ability to fight and his ability to be dexterous and use his hulking figure in ways that kind of like belie him as a person. Like, he's, you know what? Here's one. If you've ever watched Brock Lesnar, and Chris will understand what I mean, Brock Lesnar is this freak of nature athlete who moves quicker than anyone who's almost 300 pounds should be able to move.
Right.
Fundamentally, that man moves quicker than he should.
Yes.
And that's
when you see it happen,
that's a terrifying fucking thing. I just love wrestling. Yeah. But he's a scary man.
It's this quiet explosiveness that is about him. So that's why I've given him to fight someone is to know them or subtle step. And these are things where he takes the time to observe and collate information and take the best possible path, or to make himself obscure, or to learn information about somebody just through not even interacting with them. Like, he's somebody that has the ability to threaten you just by being near him, and then the next second he's gone.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the person that I wanted to build. And someone that understanding has been my dump stat, but it's not because he's dumb. It's because he hates the politics. He has such a massive and unwavering faith to the house, to the point where, like, one of his drive stats is obey my house in all things. But he's also someone who's so incredibly confident in his skills. And more to the point, what makes him a bastard? He enjoys violence. Like, you use him as a blunt instrument, point him towards something to interrogate, to torture, to fight. He will relish that opportunity because A, he knows he's good at it. B, he knows he's the one that you will call for that. And C, it's in service of a higher power, House Ikshana. And like, he is somebody. So second to that, one thing that we would look to do is to create a bit of a further connection between our characters. So not just being a warrior, but my personal trait is being a personal guard, specifically to the lady, Lady Disha. So again, he knows he's being used as a blunt instrument. He doesn't really fucking care.
Yeah.
Someone try to get to Disha. I beg
please
you.
Please try,
Please try.
I double
Phil,
dare you.
Please try.
I also think it's something where potentially that's an avenue of how they've gotten Fremen information is through sheer interrogation, torture, extracting information from people through his knife, because power is gained at a knife's edge.
Ooh.
These are our agents of House Ikshana. All of them have a little something else under the surface to how they present. And these are the characters who will be on Arrakis, maneuvering for gain and to avoid disaster when we begin our season, which is called Shifting Sands.
It's good.
Shifting Sands.
I don't think we've had a bum name.
They're
in
all
10
pretty good,
seasons.
Yeah.
Imagine if you just called out one. You'd be like, accept this.
That was terrible.
No. It's always so exciting to hear the season name because it just gives you chills. I don't know.
So much better than Ambrosia.
Mystery Down Under.
Homeland.
What does that have to do with Avatar The Last Airbender? Like the TV show Homeland?
Genuinely
character Homelander?
After we fucking released Homeland, I was like, oh, like that TV show that that's about...
Oh, you've ruined our searchability.
Our SEO is fucked.
Fuck.
Share the podcast.
So yeah, please join us for that. If you would like to support us, the easiest way is to rate and review us wherever you're listening to us. If you would like to go a bit further to support us, we have a Patreon. That is patreon.com/RollToCast. Get episodes early, get episodes ad-free. You can even join us for our monthly live stream on the highest tiers. And generally, we love and appreciate all of our patrons. And they will join us on our Discord as well, our community Discord, where we have lots of discussions. People get early insight into what we're playing.
Yeah, they already know we're playing, dude.
They knew. They knew
so long ago.
They knew.
They knew.
So if you want that to be you, jump on our Discord and support our Patreon. But until we return next time with episode 1 of Dune Adventures in the Imperium Shifting Sands, I have been Phil.
I have been Ellen.
I've been Sean.
I've been Chris.
Bye. Bye. Happy 10th anniversary, everyone.
Oh,
welcome to season 10. You have been listening to Shifting Sands, which is a Roll to Cast production. The best way to find us is on Twitter, Discord, and our Patreon. All our podcasts are on Acast, Spotify, YouTube, and all good podcatchers. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rolltocast. Dune, Adventures in the Imperium, is an officially sublicensed property from Gale Force 9, a Battlefront Group company. All rights reserved.
And we have created a house miner, so far smaller in scope, and they have a couple of things that they specialize in.
I have to cough and pee.
Cool, yeah. Sorry. That's right. Let's take a minute. We're going to be talking about miner houses when you get back. Apologies. All about the kids.
Cough and pee, cough and pee, pee and cough.
Do it at the same time. Because then it's going to go everywhere. It's my favorite How I Met Your Mother quote. Why is there always pee on the floor? Well, you were the one who put the Far Side calendar up in the bathroom, and you know I laugh with my whole body. So stupid. It's always like the little lines that, you know, that those are the comedic punchlines I love.
Like
for.
It would be only one joke a month, and he repeatedly laughs, repeatedly laughs at it every time he goes in.
Oh yeah, that's so true. I didn't even think about that. I didn't even think about it would be the same every fucking month. It's just an easily amused character. Which it is.
He is, yeah. That's his trait, easily amused.
Oh.
Yeah. Hold for cough.
Hold for dog.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.